Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, if you're a golfer, and if you're particularly a bad golfer, you may know the story of Morris Flitcroft. Back in 1976, he entered the British Open and he hit the record books immediately because he scored the highest score ever recorded in the British Open. 1-2-1. 1-2-1. And there's a new movie about his exploits and his stunts called The Phantom of the Open. And we're going to be talking to his son, James, on the show today. A couple of things. The Phantom of the Open is absolutely brilliant. It's just one of those feel-good movies and it'll cheer you up and you'll cry and you'll laugh and you'll feel better after it. And it stars Mark Rylance, who plays the part of Morris Flitcroft, and his wife is played by Sally Hawkins. You know her from Paddington and other things. And it's just one of those lovely, lovely movies. It's just brilliantly acted, and it's a brilliant story as well. And James is going to come on and tell us that. And it's that sort of, you know, somebody, an ordinary man. He was a crane operator in the shipyards in Barrow-on-Furness, and he thought he could do anything, and so he entered the British Open, and that's the story, and it's a brilliant story. Anyway, we'll be talking to James, his son, who just by the way, him and his twin brother Gene, they were the disco dancing champions of the world at one stage. That happened as well. That's real as well. So amazing family. We'll be talking to him after 4 o'clock. And another amazing story on the show today is the story of Mayo man Kieran Lally. Back in 2013, he got to the top of Everest, and he has a new book out, Beyond the Summit, the story of one man's need to scale his inner Everest. And Kieran, who's a plumber, now living in Dublin, is coming in to tell us his story. And there's more to it than just climbing a mountain, I can assure you. So he'll be in before 4 o'clock, and other things as well between now. And if you have anything on your mind that you want to share with us, 51551 ray@rte.ie. And it continues, and everyone I talk to, they go, what can we do? What can we do? I feel a little bit helpless and useless, because you're watching all the images and you're hearing all the reports and you're reading all the reports from war-torn Ukraine, and you're going, what can I do as an individual? What can we do as a family? So people are organising events all over the place and doing different things. And obviously, if you register with the Red Cross to take somebody into your home, that's the ultimate. And I think 20,000 people have done that so far, which is brilliant. But we got an email from Bernie from Bees Beauty. And she said, wonder if there's any chance of a shout out for our virtual facial on Sunday, 20th of March. That'd be this coming Sunday at 8 o'clock. A group of Dermalogica skin experts have come together and are donating 100% of funds raised to the Irish Red Cross in Ukraine. So participants will receive a sample pack of Dermalogica products, including sponges and headband beforehand. Then on Sunday, we will send them a Zoom code. We will all join together on Zoom at 8 o'clock. We will guide everyone to their professional facial at home, including massage with spoons. Massage with spoons, new one on me. Anita from adorn.ie will guide us in meditation while our masks are on. An hour later, everybody will drift off to bed for fabulous sleep and wake up with amazing glowing skin. An hour of respite from the madness in the world with the benefit of helping the Irish Red Cross. And beesbeauty.ie, that's bees as in the things that go buzzing around the place, B-E-E-S beauty.ie for information on that. So that's they're doing their bit to raise funds for the Red Cross, doing amazing work in Ukraine. Did you watch Holding last night? Loads of reviews today. It's sort of, you know, mixed reviews. It's an adaptation, TV adaptation of Graham Norton's book Holding, and it's set in West Cork, Drimaleague, we were told by Pauline McGlynn, who's in it. And I'm wondering what you thought of it, if you saw it last night. Mainly positive reviews, and I'm sure Graham Norton would be happy with those. And he's a man who's associated with the Eurovision Song Contest. as is the late Terry Wogan. And I see this is the way people work, you see, because if you're a fan of the Eurovision, you're a fan. And of course, fan is short for fanatic. So there's a lot of fanatical Eurovision fans. So they're watching every move and every announcement. And the latest one is they've announced the running order, and they now know that song 9 is the Italian song. And you're going, I don't care, Ray. What relevance is that to me? And why you mentioned Terry Wogan? Well, the reason is that Terry Wogan famously said when it came to song 9, he'd have a drink. And you see, we know that Italy, because they won last year, straight into the final. So song 9 on the final night will be Italy's. And that was the time that Terry Wogan had a little sup of Bailey's. That was his drink of choice. And he was very funny about it. It was a sort of to anaesthetise him from himself, from the Eurovision and the songs and everything that goes with it. Anyway, so this is, I don't know what Marty Whelan does. I don't know what Graham Norton does. But this is the song that will be the 9th on the night of the final in this year's Eurovision, broadcast live from Turin in Italy. And it's Mahmoud and Blanco and Brividi. Yes.
Sempre e ti vorrei rubare un cielo di perle e pagherai.
Yeah, and he famously said it used to be song 11, but over the years it got earlier and earlier to help him cope with the absurdities of what he called Eurovision's triumph of appalling taste. That's only he could say it. I remember Bated Breath. I remember my first introduction, one of my first introductions to Terry Wogan, and he was talking to somebody and he said, I'm sitting here with bated breath. I always bait my breath when I'm fishing for a compliment. That's the way he, brilliant man. And sadly missed. Liam has been on to us and he says, you had a request yesterday for cassette tapes for a girl with tape deck in her car. I have these if she wants them. And we got loads of offers yesterday, Liam, of people with cassettes. And we suggested if you want to, that you put together a little hamper of 3, maybe not too many, because we don't want to break the bank with the postage. But if you've got 3 cassettes, send them off to us and we'll pass them on to the person who was looking for them yesterday. So our address here, The Ray D'Arcy Show, RTE Donnybrook, Dublin 4. And Liam has the picture there. I'm just looking there. A lot of Neil Young there. There's about 20 cassettes there. A lot of Neil Young. So you're obviously a fan of this. What else have you got there? You have a good bit of Talking Heads. Yeah, that's good. A bit of Aslan in there. You have a bit of Gordon Lightfoot. If I could read your mind. Do you know what I noticed in your preferences there, Liam? No female singers at all.
Could read my mind, love. What a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old.
And there's a bit of Nirvana. It's a rocking collection. Led Zeppelin's in there as well. So thanks for that, Liam. If you best three there, send them on to us and we'll pass them on. We were talking about malapropisms. Is that the word? Malapropisms, yeah. Last week, I can't even say the word. There've been sort of bits and pieces coming in since. There was a tweet there we spotted from Blondid Reardon in Leitrim. And she says, my mum called these man get out and I've been crying since. And it's mange too. See, man get out, MANGETOUT, mange too. Man get out, that's good. Holding is only on ITV, not on TV3 yet, coming soon. Yeah, but some people can get ITV, and if you have Sky, you can put in numbers and get it, but you have to watch it. You can't record and you can't pause it. It's like old school telly. And we got on to Virgin Media One last week to ask them when Holding was coming, and they said in the future. And I see in all the reviews I've read today, they all say the same thing. It'll be on Virgin Media in the future. It's 4 1-hours and it's on ITV. Monday nights, 9 to 10. 5 on 5 5 on ray@rte.ie. I better tell you about our quiz. It's a reel in the ears quiz. Here we go.
Yeah, so we're looking for two people to come on and answer three questions each on clips they will hear, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we're looking for two people, as I say. And it's a great prize. And this week, we have a two-night stay for two people in the Art House Hotel, which is a chic and stylish boutique hotel in the heart of Dublin City, just off St. Stephen's Green. It's inspired both directly and indirectly by the Bauhaus movement. And there are 102 artworks by Irish and international artists which are on view throughout the property. And you can find out more, arthousedublin.ie. That's arthousedublin.ie. Two nights stay for two people and dinner on one of the evenings in Laszlo's Bar and Restaurant. So here is your qualifying question today. Two people after 4 o'clock. What is the name of the horse racing festival that kicks off in England today? What's the name of the horse racing festival that kicks off in England today? 0818715925. 0818715925. And we'll be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Marty and Graham both raise a glass to Terry at Song 9. So says Claire. She's been on to inform us of that. Thank you very much, Claire. Now, loads of songs there that I could choose from. What will we go with there? We go with Gordon Lightfoot, Crazy World, or None of the Above. Maybe this one, because this features in the movie that we're going to be talking about after 4 o'clock, and it's Christopher Cross and Ride Like the Wind. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Christopher Cross and Ride Like the Wind on RT Radio 1. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Looking for two people to come on our quiz. 0818715925. And today's qualifying question: what's the name of the horse racing festival that kicks off in England today? 0818715925. And a lovely breakaway in the Art House Hotel in Dublin City Centre for two people is on offer today. So we'll be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Just thanks very much to Katrina Graney. Now, I think Katrina was on the quiz one of the days. Anyway, she took it upon herself to send us in two apple trees from Future Forests, useful, fruitful and beautiful plants. And so we just want to say thank you very much, Katrina. A dessert, as in sweet apples, and a cooking apple tree, which reminds me of my granny's back garden, because she had the two apple trees, one for cookers and one for ones you could eat straight from the branch. And then there was, of course, gooseberry bush and I think blackberry bush. Loads of things in the back garden, but lovely memories of that. So thanks, Katrina. We'll find a place in the back garden and plant those and see what happens. That's a lovely thing, isn't it? A lovely thing. Now, 51551 ray@rte.ie. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, as things continue in Ukraine, most of us are left feeling like we want to help in whatever way we can. Well, one couple, Darla O'Regan and Ian Agnew, have raised over €10,000 for the Red Cross since last Thursday. And they join me on the line now to tell us how and why. How are you doing, Daryl?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Ian?
Not too bad. Thanks, Ray, and yourself?
Good. So, we start with you, Ian. So you were sitting on the couch watching the news, like most of us are, of an evening. And how did the conversation go then?
So essentially we were sat just watching a bit of coverage on it, and the two of us were just kind of, you know, the empathy was kind of flowing out, and we're just kind of talking through a few things, what to do, and Daryl had kind of come up with the idea then off the back of just watching the coverage and feeling the empathy for the poor people who were put out of their homes. She had suggested, well, why don't we try and do a bit of a sponsored walk just to try and raise a few quid for the guys. The idea was, you know, they were put across and they might have to walk towards the border. So we thought, yeah, you know, we would walk from Belfast and cross the border and head over to Dublin. And I guess then it was a matter of choosing the charity. And again, you know, full credit goes to Daryl. She chose the Irish Red Cross. And the two of us kind of then set about from then and just picked a route and thought, right, let's do this. So
Daryl,
kind of how the idea spawned.
So Daryl, you're the brains of the operation. A beautifully simple idea. And was the need to do something very strong for yourself and Dean?
It was, yeah. Like, you know, like everyone else in the country, you're just watching everything unfold and, you know, you feel compelled to do something, but you don't know how you can help, really. So I thought we would just try to raise a few quid. And the walk seemed like a good choice for us. Like, we do a fair bit of walking anyway. Like, we live quite close to the Lagan Towpath in Belfast. And we go down hiking in the moors just down nearby as well. And, you know, it's kind of, I suppose, in these situations, you leverage things that you already do or have access to. And we thought, right, we'll do a walk.
Yeah. How long is it from Belfast to Dublin?
So, as the crow flies, it should be 100 miles, but it was just over. It was 108 miles, or about 175 kilometres.
Okay. And you just headed off, did you? Or did you do any prep at all?
So
A bit of shodding, really, I think, was the main prep. Just making sure we had good comfy shoes and making sure our feet weren't going to hit us too badly for blisters afterwards, you know, the main thing.
Of course, you had to set up a page. And that's the brilliant thing now about Just Giving and GoFundMe and I Donate. You can do that quite easily, can't you, Daryl?
Yeah. Like, you'd have that set up fairly quickly. I looked at a couple of different platforms, and Just Giving was great because they don't take a platform fee for charities.
Right.
So 100% of the proceeds go straight into the account of the charity that you choose. So, you know, you never touch the money, it just goes directly into the charity account. So it was fairly easy to set up. And then it's just a case of, you know, drumming up support.
And it's transparent as well, which is brilliant, because people, you know, people feel safe about giving money because it goes straight to the Red Cross, which is good. So drumming up support, how do you do that? Is it social media or just Facebook, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I suppose it's just in the beginning, just roped in, like, friends, family, everyone who would listen to us, really. Started posting it on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and my three sisters were all going, you know, I suppose pushing it through their own channels as well, and my dad drumming up support down in West Cork.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's been just a case of sharing the journey along the way to keep people donating for the 10 days that the page was live up until now. And
And you got an injury then, Daryl, halfway through it?
Yeah, shocked. Sure. Like, we weren't exactly well prepared or well trained for the walk that side. So on the second day, I managed to injure my knee.
Right.
And couldn't really walk. I tried hobbling along for about another 10 kilometres before my legs just said nope. So I decided I'd have to finish it by bike, which was disappointing, but, like, it was just, you know, it was the only way to kind of see it through.
Yeah, so Ian, then, it was your idea to walk, and then you ended up on a bike, and Ian had to do the walk. I'm sure he pointed it out to you already. He didn't need me to point it out to you, but that's the way it is. So you eventually made it to Dublin. When was it? Friday?
No, we made it to Dublin then on Sunday.
Sunday.
So we set off on Thursday, and you know, we'd always sort of planned it around to take 4 days. Worked out just about a little over a marathon a day across the 4 days worth of distance covered, so fair track. And you know, we'd left outside the Ormo Park there in Belfast. You know, there's a bit of a tribute up for the people of Ukraine, so took some pictures there, and then set off for the Irish Red Cross office. And yeah, so after 4 days, a few ups and downs and a sore knee, it was we made it in our destination despite the weather's best efforts to hold us back now.
Yeah, you had some tough weather there, wind and rain and cold.
Yeah.
So well done. That's brilliant. And it shows that if you want to, if you feel the need to do something, it's very doable, isn't it? Very doable.
Yeah. I have to say, Ray, that the generosity of people has just been fantastic, be that friends, family and work colleagues. You know, both our employers have been fantastic, you know, Intercom for Daryl and Converitech for myself here, and just outside Antrim. And it has been very warming just to see, you know, that everybody else is certainly feeling the empathy towards, you know, the people of Ukraine who've had this situation forced on them through no fault of their own. And, you know, people are very keen to get involved in whatever way they can. And just fantastic to see, particularly at the minute, you know, where the price of everything's going crazy, people are still willing to be generous towards a great cause. And yeah, just very, very heartwarming to see, you know, the well wishes of people along the way and that type of thing. So,
yeah, I think everybody is moved by the stories, the pictures, and everything that's coming out of Ukraine. You're leaving the Just Giving page open till Friday, So how can people get it? What's it called?
Yeah, that's right. So if for anybody who wants to donate, if you go to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/walk for Ukraine 2022.
Okay.
You'll find all the details there.
Great. Darla Regan and Ian Agnew, well done again. Mind yourselves. Stay safe. Thank you. Bye. Thanks. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Knew Daryl many, many moons ago from Galway. Always a kind and thoughtful person. It doesn't surprise me to hear she did this. Fair play to herself and Ian. What a couple, says Eric. Now, on his honeymoon in 1989, Mayo plumber Kieran Lally visited the base camp of Everest. What he saw sparked a desire in him to one day climb to the summit himself. In 2013, he fulfilled that dream and made it to the summit of Everest, making him one of an elite group of only 6,000 people to have climbed to the top of Mount Everest. He left a St. Bridget's cross and a Mayo flag on the mountain and has written a book about his experience called Beyond the Summit. How are you doing, Kieran?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Were you the first Mayo man to reach the top of Mount Everest?
So far, but I'm quite sure there'll be somebody
following. Oh, you're the only? The first and only? Right.
I think so, yeah. I believe so, yeah. But I'm quite sure there'll be somebody. I'm not encouraging anybody to do it, by the way, but
So if somebody came to you looking for advice on whether to climb Mount Everest or not, you would say?
I'd not give advice one way or the other, but I'd wish them the best and help in any way I can if that was their decision to do so.
Right. Yeah. So yourself and Ger, your wife, were on your honeymoon and you were the travelling type, a travelling couple.
We're the travelling couple. We got to Nepal and we had something like, I think it was a 14-hour bus journey before we got off the bus, and then it was about a 2-week walk to base camp at the time. We didn't use the option of flying in. And we had a great journey in. It was a wonderful 2 weeks. But then when we got there, we were base camp at that time. It was so colourful. It was, but we'd reached our destination. But at the same token, I wasn't ready to turn back. I was looking at these guys. These guys had just, they were at the beginning.
Yeah.
And they were about to set off, and I saw a number of them going off into the glaciers, into this broken up glacier, and just disappeared into the glacier. And I said, my God, I think I wouldn't mind being a bit like them guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you feel that you weren't?
Well, I wondered why I had limited my expectation to base camp. Like when we set off, this base camp was the goal. This was the Mecca. It was, it was all I wanted to achieve. And then when I got there, there was another group of people at the beginning of their quest, and I says, God, well, why had I limited myself?
Well, you're on your honeymoon.
I've got to correct you there. It wasn't your honeymoon, was it? No. We got married when we came back to Ireland.
Okay. Yeah. So it was just before you went on your... So you were just doing the final travelling before you...
We were down in Australia at the time, at Sydney, I think, and we flew to Singapore, and we came back as overland for large parts of it. We went up Malaysia, Thailand, into Calcutta, spent a week in Mother Teresa's refuge, and worked there for the week, and continued on up to where was it? That big temple the in India, the Taj Mahal,
right,
and then up to Nepal to base camp and so on, and travel around.
So it was a very powerful then experience because it stayed with you. And what was it? Was it niggling away?
It didn't, as the famous saying has it, it didn't go away. No,
yeah,
and so then basically we got our went back in Dublin. We got our mortgage and we got a. We got involved in buying and renovating a house, and while later our son Owen came along, and a while after that I got a bit restless, and Geraldine gave me her blessing to go and climb Kilimanjaro, and that sort of took the, how will I call it, the restlessness out of me for a year or two, and then took my eyes, went to Georgia in Russia on a mountain called Elbrus. It's about the same height, around 6,000 metres, maybe a bit less, and but it had got snow and ice. And with that experience behind me, I came back and I was okay again for another year or two. But at this stage, I wanted to increase height.
Right.
So my eyes went towards Argentina, and the mountain is called Aconcagua. And that's 7,000 metres. Okay. And the beauty of 7,000 metres is on the higher mountains, that's where you start using oxygen. So at this stage, I felt with the experience I had that I was good to get to 7,000 metres. Basically, it was the highest mountain outside of the Himalayas. So the next obvious step was the Himalayas.
All right. But was that always your goal, though? In your quiet moments, were you dreaming of the top of Mount Everest?
Well, you're gradually building confidence. All of a sudden, you can say, hey, I'm good for this.
Yes.
I've got this bit of experience. I've got that bit of experience.
What age were you at that stage?
What?
What age were you?
Oh, God, I would have been about 48 or maybe 50.
Right.
Yeah, 48, 49.
Okay.
I was cutting it tight.
Who was the record for the oldest person to?
I don't know that.
No, I don't know that.
Yeah. I don't know that. I'm the oldest Mayo man, though.
Yeah, and the only Mayo man, and the first Mayo man.
Yeah.
So you were improving your CV, and you were getting more and more experience with rocks and ice and oxygen, all building towards a big one.
Yeah, and the other part of it is it's sometimes it can be a lonely quest. You can be there on the mountain for quite a while, and you might be asking yourself, what am I at? Like, basically, there are more comfortable places to be. But at the same token, you also learn, the higher the mountain, the longer the period of time to climb it. So you're learning how to deal with this isolation. And that's key, because people just up and leave. They just say, if you go on too big of an expedition too quickly, too soon, too early, there's a danger that you'll just pack up tent and go.
Yeah.
You just might say, to hell with this. This is not for me.
Right. I'm fascinated by people who climb Mount Everest. And the question I ask every time, and I still haven't got
an answer, and it's unlikely you'll get one this time, but anyway.
Well, you know what it is? It's a big, huge, three-letter word.
Oh, the big why.
Yeah, why? Why? He's taking off his jacket. He's getting serious now. He's taking off
I'm
his
under
jacket.
Pressure here. Yeah. Why? I don't know that I've ever really uncovered the answer to that. But basically, it's to prove something to yourself, which you don't end up doing at the end of it all. But afterwards, after climbing it, you can... I think I try to answer some of these questions in the book.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reflection to be done afterwards, because in the doing of it, you're too caught up in the doing of it to think very clearly.
Yeah, so on the
outside of what you're doing, actually doing.
Of course, because that takes up all your energy and your everything, your emotions, everything. So on reflection then, I suppose, do you think before you do it that it's going to be one of those huge life-changing achievements, that you will be a different person? Of course, we're a different person after anything, because that's the way we're constantly changing. But did you think this was going to do something for you? Was there something you felt you had to fix, some void you had to fill?
I'd say there was a void for sure, and I think you're burning up the energy. And a lot of the time, I think a lot of these things are distractions as opposed to actually looking for some magic wand. You know? But like, I mean,
distractions from what, Kieran?
Distractions from dealing with the void.
Right.
And my God, you're going deep now.
No, but because I think this is important, because it's a huge thing, and like we have to say as well that loads of people, and you would have known this before you went, that loads of people lose their lives on Everest. And just let's go off onto the mountain for a while, because when you were up there making your attempt for the summit, that you came across a dead person.
Yeah, it was strange. I remember I've written about that experience,
yeah, but
more so my reaction to that experience, because, like, I mean, there's hardly an Irish person that hasn't been at a wake and certainly touched a corpse, and if not kissed a corpse, and was very happy, and it wouldn't be an unpleasant experience at all. It would be a positive emotion. But when I came on this body, it struck me. It wasn't part of my thinking that I was going to come on some poor chap that didn't make it, and he was just lying there.
And was he still attached to the rope that you were going up?
Yeah, well, thankfully, because otherwise he'd have slipped away, and I think his body was recovered afterwards and brought down, which was really good for his family. But I think it just because it happened real suddenly that I came up on this person real suddenly that I think I had to face my own vulnerability, you don't travel very fast up at that altitude, but I was happy to sort of get to the higher side of where the lad was anchored, or where he was clipped onto the anchor. Yeah, I wasn't. The other thing that happens up at altitude is your movement is so slow. Like 100 meters down at sea level is not a great distance.
No.
But up there, it is a massive distance. You're not talking minutes, you're talking hours. At maybe an hour, 100 meters. That's very rough now. I haven't done my calculations on that. But it'd be on that scale of things. But the other thing that happens as well is that your mind slows down to the same pace as your body. Your mind is a long way from fast, quick, responsive, alert. So I personally believe that that's how a lot of people get
into trouble.
Well, it's not that they get into trouble, it's that they don't get themselves out of trouble, right?
Yes.
So basically, gravity will still react in the same way, or you'll react to gravity in the same way, but your reaction to what happens when you slip or fall is so slow that you're not... you're just not alert enough, fast enough, quick thinking enough to counteract it, or maybe reach out and grab a rope or do something, which is why you must always be clipped on.
So you there were, I suppose, presented with your own mortality there. There was a man who was doing the same thing as you were attempting to do, and he had died. And you had probably read about this as well, like that brilliant book, Into Thin Air.
Yes.
And that expedition back in 1996, I think that particular year, 8 people died on Everest. So it's well documented. So you knew and your wife knew that there was a possibility that you wouldn't survive it. And yet you went anyway.
Well, there's an awareness that you may not do so, but the belief is different. Your belief, you believe you're going to be able to do it. I'd done a lot of the preparation, and like my wife and I, we'd done base camp. She was pretty well, very well clued in as to what was involved, I think she had a belief in me that I would achieve it, and that was pretty important. So, Geraldine, thank you for that.
Right, and she was obviously living with you, knowing that this was an itch that had to be scratched.
That's a lovely expression, isn't it? Yeah,
it's euphemistic. It's euphemistic for Everest now, in fairness, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, the why? I'm still looking for the why.
The why is basically, I'm not sure that, but I'll put an effort into that. Basically, I think you're trying to prove something to oneself. And back in the day when like I'm 63 now, but when we were younger, I think there was an Ireland where there was a lot of put downs was the order of the day. You couldn't be getting above your station and things like that.
Yeah.
And you weren't ever encouraged, I think, to believe that you'd be the cleverest or the sharpest knife in the drawer, as the expression has it, right? And what astonishes me now, all the people of my age group, well, not all, but a big percentage that was treated in that way, that all of a sudden we all have children now and they are bright as buttons. They have degrees, masters, you name it. Wherever all this intelligence came from, I'd love to know, but it didn't seem to have been there at the time. And basically, I think you would live uneasily with that. That wouldn't sit very well within you. There'd be sort of something that would be trying to, I suppose, rebel or object to this. That might have been just a way of proving, hey, I can do something.
So,
I can get higher.
Reading between the lines there, was there a sense that you hadn't fulfilled your full potential as a human
being?
Again,
I can never manage to answer that one, because, like, I mean, had things been different as a kid, and had I grown up different, I still don't have the answer as to how things might have unfolded. So, like, I mean, I've nothing to compare it with.
But you, in the book, you describe your school days.
Well, like, I mean, I think I've described lots of people's school days.
Where I suppose that you weren't encouraged. The opposite.
The one thing I always love about the GAA is that the greatest source of encouragement growing up was on the GAA pitch, and they'd always shout encouragement. It was screamed from the sidelines, man. Like, I mean, they really says, "Come on, get that ball." You know what I mean? And that'd bring you a great distance. Yeah, you'd feel good on the pitch. You'd feel good coming off it, and somebody.
And did you feel you didn't get that encouragement at school?
I'd agree with you on that one. Yeah.
So now we're building a picture here of you. So you went through a school system that didn't really fulfil your full potential, and you arrived into adulthood, and you still felt that you'd something to prove, maybe.
Well, yeah, like I mean, I ended up in the trades, and which is very rewarding, and I'm happy about that. I'm self-employed. I'm happy enough. Nice house, nice family, good people, etc., etc.
Plumber,
and I'm in the plumbing business. Yeah, I may not have achieved anything any greater.
No, but I'm saying sorry. This from what I read in the book. I'm not. I'm accusing you here. You wrote this in the book.
I must be too ready to defend. Yeah. I did play in the back line. Yeah.
So you see, I'm reading between the lines in the book, and the book is sort of, was it more difficult to write the book than climb Mount Everest?
Well, it was definitely more difficult to get it published. But anyway, so I'd like to say a thank you to PJ Cumming and the Ballpoint Press and his wife Rosemary for that. Thank you.
So you climbed in 2013, so you've had 9 years to reflect. So you brought, and you mentioned it loads of times, which was a big thing for you, ye Mayo men. You had two things you wanted to leave on the top, and that was a Mayo flag and a St. Bridget's cross. Now, the Mayo flag, you've been a Mayo man, that makes sense. The St. Bridget's cross, not so obvious.
My granny was, name was Bridget, and my dad died on St. Bridget's Day, and it was... The mountain brings out all those emotions. Like, I mean, I think any guy that does something that's physically, how will I call it, challenging, just the sheer effort of what it is brings out all those emotions. Obviously, emotions, you can't, when they come in all forms, shapes and sizes. And that was a powerful emotion. And St. Bridget's, it was nice to think that I had the cross. I could talk to my dad up on the mountain. And I spoke to my mum a lot, Nora Lally as well. My dad's name is Anthony. And
what were you saying to them up there?
Wow, I wasn't ready for that question. It was basically, the doubts would creep in, you'd say. Like, particularly at Camp 4, you're there and...
So this is about 7,000 metres, is it?
It'd be more like 2,000 metres.
Camp 4?
Camp 3 would be more like...
It says Camp 4 here is 8,000 metres.
Yeah.
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 So Camp 3 is 6,800 metres.
Yeah. And where are we here? Like, I mean, you'd be hanging about, we'll say... waiting for the time to leave or depart on the final summit, and the doubts creep in, and you just have to face them. So that'd be a nice time to have a word with Dad. You're up there at the stairs. You're looking at the top of Mount Everest is out of view, but the early stages of it is certainly in view, and you're saying, "Hey," I just said, "Hey, Dad, be with me tonight," and. Sorry, getting a bit emotional there now.
Right.
And I don't know if he was, but I like to think he was.
Hmm.
And that's
must be spectacular, because you're on the top of the world. You're above the clouds. So
there's a few things happening at that point. You're gasping for breath, and the mind isn't exactly working on sea level.
You're not lucid.
But you do, like, I mean, you stop an awful lot, because you must stop to get the breath, and during the moments there's a lot of you do look around, you do see, you make the observations, and there's no other mountain on the journey up. There's all those mountains, and you're looking up to them, you're looking at their peaks, and as you go higher and higher, and you close in on the summit. There's absolutely nothing above you. You're there, you're it, you're there's no other mountain higher than you. You're looking down on them. You're looking down on all of them.
Yeah.
Not down in the sense of down, but obviously.
Yes, you know what I mean? And then there's the, which you've alluded to a lot there, that you need oxygen. So it's not inhabitable at this level.
No.
Without oxygen. And that must, that sort of makes you look at the world in a sort of you have an overview, don't you, of life, human life in a way.
Well, you're certainly at the top of the stairs and you look down and you're there gasping for air and your wee cylinder is on your back and it's mixing with the existing small percentage of air in the atmosphere. And you just think, my God, there's a small film of air surrounding our planet. And then you just think, like, I mean, what are we doing with it? What in the name of God? And then you see a bomb going off and these big bellows, apart from the destruction it has caused, those big black clouds going into the air. And you just say, what is this? This tiny, tiny, tiny film of air.
Protecting it and we're ruining it.
And we're making a bad fist of minding it. I think we should, somebody somewhere should do a deal with the Brazilian government to get them stop burning down them forests.
So you get up there then, you know, you're at the top, you've done this thing that since 1998, you've been sort of, it's been in the back of your head.
The quest.
You're finally there.
Like, it's a bit like the quest for Sam, isn't it? you're finally there,
You should go
you're
in. Maybe you're the man they need to go in and give them the half time or the pre-match talk in the dressing room at Crow Park.
Good man. Yourself. Thanks for that. Yeah. I'd say James Horton would be really,
You are the only Mayo man to reach the top of the world. So what goes through your head then? And I know you're tired and you've been climbing now for how many hours, is it?
Well, about 10, 11.
Right.
There's a cut-off time when the deal would go down something like when you leave camp 4, I think around 10, 11 o'clock at night. The deal is a 14, some people say 12, some people say 14. I was edging towards the 14 because I was a little bit older. So basically, I was saying 10 up, 4 down.
Right.
So 10 was my cutoff point. Wherever you are at 10 hours, if you haven't met it, well, you just haven't met it. You cut your losses, you come back and try and get back down in one piece.
And some people don't because they're so close. They're so tantalizingly close to the top.
It's just summit fever can kick in,
Summit fever, that's a thing, is it?
You can. There's all sorts of things apparently that happens is like you can, apparently the mind can, I don't know which side of the mind kicks in and takes over, but it's like, it's almost like you're operating with two minds. One of them really wants to push on and do it, and the other logical path want to keep in control. We'll call it the logical mind, the one that's going to save you, that's going to mind you, that's going to keep you. You've got to keep that one, on high alert, if you wish, right? And not let the other one in, because the other one will negotiate a deal to achieve the summit.
Yes.
And at this stage, you mightn't be in a position to sort of return, but or you might have frostbite that you should get down as quickly as possible. But then it'll say, oh yeah, I'll sacrifice a toe, I'll sacrifice a finger, I'll sacrifice this to achieve the goal, because your rationale is gone. The mountain will strip you. It'll strip you and strip you. It'll strip you even of your thought, of your thinking.
Yeah.
It just bears you to your soul. It's one of the things that it does do is that this might be part of your earlier question as to the why. One of the things it will definitely do, it'll strip you, it'll empty you of emotion, it'll bring you down physically. You'll lose weight, you'll lose reason, you'll lose your logic, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. No, you're fine.
It is very powerful.
So when you're up there then, so you've reached the top.
Yeah.
What's the...
Is that Thank God.
Is that it? Yeah.
Well, did I actually visit... I was obsessed with actually putting the Mayo flag on it, and I want to be 100% sure that I left the St. Bridget's Cross now it's great that it's a national holiday. We can call it Mrs. And the other thing is Bridget is Irish as opposed to Patrick, and that's also very sweet.
Right.
And we can call it Mrs. Patrick.
That's right. That's, yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to sort of try and scramble enough snow or ice and sort of bury the cross there, which proved quite difficult. And then I had a little bit of nylon rope going through the eye of the Mayo flag, and I wanted to attach that to the pole. There's this pole with all the prayer flags, the Buddhist and Himalayan prayer flags that flutter in the sky, and I wanted the Mayo flag there so badly.
And it is there.
I set about, and then of course you have to get the photograph, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right, so there you go, another person, another interview about reaching the top of Mount Everest, and I'm still no wiser as to the why. I know I am, in fairness, Kieran. That was the most enlightening I've had, and I've had a number of those interviews, so thank you for that.
I'll take that. Thank you
for that. And great to hear a Mayo man climbing high, says Frank. And just, you'd be interested in this, Rachel Blackmore just won on Honeysuckle in the Cheltenham Champion Hurdle for the second year in a row. So there's another great...
The ladies are flying.
They're flying it. Kieran's book is Beyond the Summit, The Story of One Man's Need to Scale His Inner Everest. And it's a great read about growing up in County Mayo and climbing Mount Everest, and where the two things sort of...
Merge.
So there you go. There's a podcast on you. There's more to you than we've managed to get out of you in 25 minutes. But thanks, Kieran. We'll talk again. Thank you. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Kieran Nally, that's Kieran with a K, and Beyond the Summit is the name of the book. Nish Darcy now, the pre-skeleton in Oglea, caught to Wallish. Grandma got caught. And somebody says, FYI, Italy is in the Eurovision final every year, regardless of whether they've won the previous year. Italy is one of the so-called big five. It is, you're right. Along with UK, France, Germany and Spain, who are automatically through every year because they pay for it. Isn't that, that's the line, isn't it? On the, I don't know if this is a malapropism or what it is, but the man get out for Monge 2. My dad recently asked me, who are this crowd, Nor Ply, who send him emails every so often? He doesn't open them in case they're a scam. It took a while to convince him that it's No Reply. That's Gary, Nor Ply. Who's this guy, Nor Ply? Now, reel in the ears. We have two quizzers waiting to answer three questions each on clips they will hear in their ears. And we have a prize. And this week, it's thanks to the lovely people in the Art House Hotel in Dublin, just off Stephen's Green. It's a stylish, chic boutique hotel, and you can find out more at arthousedublin.ie. It's a two-night stay for two people and dinner on one night, on one of the evenings in Laszlo's Bar and Restaurant. We say hello, Shelley Carroll. How are you doing, Shelley?
Good, how are you?
Would you ever climb Mount Everest?
No, I'm afraid of heights.
There you go. That rules you out.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you're Mount Mellick is flat enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfectly flat, no bumps, no sudden surprises.
Yeah, right. And what are you up to today, Shelley Carroll in Mount Mellick?
Currently, just on the way back from Castle Pollard in a lorry.
Right.
That's what I'm doing today, truck run.
A truck run? Are you driving?
No, I'm the passenger, he's driving.
Right. Who's he?
Oh, my father.
Oh, right.
I should mention him.
And do you do that on a regular basis?
He does, yeah. Well, I jump in every now and again, but yeah.
Just for company?
Yeah, just for the crack.
Ah, right. Great. Brilliant. And has he got a CB radio?
No, he has a hands-free kit, and I think that's advanced enough.
Yes, yeah. Now, I'd say CB radios are gone with it. Are they mainly, I don't know now, do truckers still use them? Ask your dad.
I haven't seen any in new lorries anyway.
No, okay, right. What's your plan for the long weekend? Any plans?
I'm actually going to be working for the long weekend in the Dunamase Arts Centre over in Portlaoise.
Aha. Uh-huh. And what have you got? What's on, plays or music or what?
We have music and plays. We have Cleona Hagen in on the Friday night, the 18th.
Right.
Then there's a show on Halcyon Days. That's on the Saturday.
Right.
And then we have Declan O'Rourke in on the 20th.
It must be great to have people back in the centre.
Oh, it's fantastic. And everyone that comes in is delighted to be back.
Yes, I'd say big smiles on everybody's faces. Yeah. Yeah.
All saying they're getting out of prison for the first time.
Right. You're up against Sharon Kelly from Carrigaline in Cork. How are you doing, Sharon?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're originally from Cork City and you moved out to Carrigaline.
A long time ago, yeah.
How long ago?
over 27 years.
Right. And who's at home with you?
Oh, just myself and my husband and my daughter, Becky, and the dog, Bailey.
Right. And how long are you married?
Oh, we're married a long time, 30 years.
Right. And you say he loves you very dearly.
Oh, he does. To the moon and back.
Does
he? My God, yeah. If he hears me now, he'd say, what a blam after.
Does he tell you every day? Does he say he loves you every day?
Do you know what? Maybe every second day.
All right.
He really does.
That's lovely,
does.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It actually is. It is. It is.
It's so important.
I appreciate him so much. It is important. Yeah.
How are you on the quizzes? How are you on the quiz, Sharon?
I'm not great. But sure, I'll give it a go.
Right. And how are you, Shelley?
Oh, I'm in the same boat.
Right. Okay. Well, good
all
luck.
The S's.
Good luck to you both. You know the deal. Three clips each. If you go for a short clip, you get 2 points. Go for a longer clip, you get 1 point. And whoever gets the most points wins the prize. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Shelley in Mount Mellick and Sharon in Carrigaline. Here we go. Okay, Shelley, to you first. The year is 2004. And we're starting at the movies. So do you want a short clip or a long clip?
A long clip.
A long clip, okay. So this tear-jerking love story starred Ryan Gosling. Can you name it? Here's your long clip.
I lost you once. I think I could do it again.
If yes.
I thought it's what you really wanted.
It is.
But don't you take the easy way out.
What easy way? There is no easy way. No matter what I do, somebody gets hurt.
Would you stop thinking about what everyone...
Oh, we'd stop it there. You're right. Yeah, you were in there like Flynn. The Notebook it is. That's 1 point for you. Good start. And to you, Sharon, 2004... Cinema, long or short?
Just go for short.
Short, you're going to go for short. Okay. This movie about a sporting underdog won Best Picture and also a Best Actress Oscar for its leading actress. Can you name the movie? And here is your short clip for 2 points.
Yes, sir. Because I know if you train me right, I'm going to be a champ.
Any ideas?
Right.
2004. Sporting underdog, and it won Best Picture and Best Actress Oscar for its leading lady. And it is
Million Dollar Baby.
It is Million Dollar Baby.
Yay!
Yes, it is. Yeah, 2 points. Hilary Swank won the Oscar, and she starred alongside Clint Eastwood, who was her boxing coach, and he directed it as well. Okay, one plays two. Back to you, Shelley. Question number two is on music. From 2004, do you want a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go with a short clip.
Short clip, okay. This is a huge hit. Can you name the song or the band? And here's your short clip for 2 points.
Go down, it's dark. The jungle is your head. Can't rule your heart.
Song or band?
Is it U2?
It is U2, yes. Yes, Vertigo by
U2.
Yes,
it.
Yeah. But you get your 2 points. Good stuff. Now, Sharon, music from 2004. Do you want a short one or a long one?
We'll go a short.
You're going to keep it short. Keep it short. Yeah. Okay. Again, huge hit. The song or the singer. Here's your short clip for 2 points.
I'm calling. A guy like you.
Song or singer?
Toxic.
Yes.
Britney Spears.
Yes. Woo-hoo. 2 points. Yes. Yes. Now, Shelley, you're on three. Sharon is on four. So you sort of have to go...
Oh, really?
You have to go for the short, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You have to go for the short. That'll put Sharon under pressure for her last question. So good luck with this. It's news and current affairs from 2004. In that year, a new law was introduced in Ireland which caused concern for some publicans, particularly those pub owners near the border of Northern Ireland. What law was it? And here is a clip. And it's a clue, and you get 2 points if you get this right.
Some of our customers are saying that they'll stay at home. Others are saying that they'll go across the border.
So a new law introduced in Ireland caused concern for some publicans. What was the law?
For both of us.
Say again?
For both of us.
No, that's for you. That's for you, Shelley.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm could I hear it again? Sorry.
We don't usually do that.
Publicans across the board.
So it's a new law introduced in Ireland which caused concern for some publicans.
Increase in alcohol charges?
No.
Oh.
It was a new law. It was the smoking ban.
Oh,
Yeah,
which was big news at the time. Sorry about that. You did well, but not good enough. Sharon started off strongly with two and you went for the one. But we're going to send you out a couple of Radar to Show mugs, one for yourself and one for your dad to keep in the cab of the truck.
Thank you very much.
Well done, Shelley. Mind yourself. Enjoy the few days over the weekend with the returned audiences in the Arts Centre. Thanks, Shelley. Sharon, well done. Sharon, you are on your way to the Arthouse Hotel in Dublin. And you can find out more at arthousedublin.ie. You win. Yeah, yes, you did. Yeah.
That's great. Now, because my birthday is coming up.
Woo-woo. Woo-woo. There you go. Well, happy birthday advance and enjoy it. Well done. See you, Sharon.
Thanks,
bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Tom from County Meath says it's easier to climb Mount Everest than it is for Mayo to win Sam Maguire. That's with reference to Kieran Lally. And Reg says, I have a CB radio in my car and house. There are still a few still using CB radio around the country. A few being the operative word there. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Now, The Phantom of the Open, it's a movie and it opens this week, as in Friday, March 18th, and it's been described as the feel-good film of the year, a complete joy, a sheer delight, profoundly moving and uproarious comedy. And it's a story of an ordinary man with an extraordinary life. Maurice Flitcroft was his name, a crane operator from Barrow in Furness who managed to gain entry to the British Open in 1976. His son James is on the line to tell us all about his da and his story. How are you doing, James?
All right, thank you, Ray.
Yeah, good to talk to you. The movie is all of those things, isn't it? It's
all of those things. Yeah. A bit of everything for everyone. Yeah. You know, if you're mad on golf, go. If your wife likes a bit of a cry, take her, etc., etc. It's a great film.
What was it like for you? Because you're in it. Well, you're not actually
surreal,
in it.
Actually.
Yeah.
Well, I am actually in it. I play first drunk man in one of the scenes. Yes. My daughter's also in it as Mike's secretary. So
right.
It was a bit surreal. But when I went to watch it, I went like, I put myself in the place of a punter and watched it for its the film's like value, right? And I was quite surprised how good it was.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's about my family, right? I looked at, you know, with an optimistic point of view and looked at the film and thought, hey, this is pretty good, you know, this is really good.
I know, it's better than pretty good. It's one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And
I'd agree with you.
Mark Rylance, who plays your dad, does it brilliantly, and Sally Hawkins, who plays your mum, is brilliant as well. So let's go back then to the mid-1970s, and you were but a chap, and you were dancing around with your twin brother, Gene. We'll come to that in a moment. But your dad was a crane driver, and did you know at that stage he was a bit of a dreamer? But that's how he's portrayed.
Not really. But we were brought up with my dad doing all kinds of things, dead good things. He was a good supportive father, like, you know, take your football matches, you know, play football, buy the sporting equipment you need, and you know, he had interest, you know, tennis was a big one, and then golf became an interest of his, and he just went all hell for leather at it and took the game up, and, you know, there was no looking back, no telling stop.
So tell them the story then. So he as you say, he takes up golf, and then the pinnacle of the golfing world at the time, and still is, the British Open. So what happens?
Yes. So what happened was, he entered the British Open, unbeknown to us, and on the Saturday morning, the tabloid papers, every front page, had his name over it, and me and Gene had been sent to get the paper, and we come home, we didn't know what was going on. He said, oh yeah, I entered the British Open on Friday, and shot the highest score, which was 121 shots. for a par 72.
So
you can imagine us, we were only kids, we were 12 or 13 years old, we were horrified, you know, we knew what was coming Monday morning at school. So you can imagine it, can't you? Go to school,
So just to explain to people, you see, you can't, if you want to enter, it's an open thing. This was a qualifying round before
qualifying
the British
round.
Open. Yes.
Yeah.
And if you're an amateur, you have to have a club, but your dad wasn't in a club.
But if you're a professional, you don't have to have a club. So he wrote on his application form that he was a professional. And that's how he got in.
Unattached.
And how much golf had he played in the lead up to it?
Probably 6 months.
Right. He came late to the sport, let's say.
Came late, very late. Right. 47 years old.
Right. And because he didn't have a club, he didn't have much practice time, did he?
Yeah. He didn't. Yeah. But he thought, because he was good at other sports, this, ball games especially, he thought, this will be easy. This will be easy. And when you're hitting a ball on the playing fields, it's different from hitting them on a golf course. You might go a long way, but they might not be going in the right direction. So I think he got confused.
So 121, which was the worst score ever recorded in a British Open. And as you say, he made the cover of the national newspapers. And he became known as the worst golfer in the world. Now, how was that for you as a 12-year-old? You and Jean going into school and your mates?
Fine, really, because it only lasted about 3 days. And every time we did it again, you know, when we were still at school, it only lasted for the first half of the week. It was forgotten about by Friday.
Yeah.
But when you're young, your minds are elsewhere anyway, aren't they? They're not too busy what's going on in the press, you know, the sporting things and golf. In them days, wasn't the big thing. You know, football was massive, the big,
yeah,
huge.
As it is now. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and you say when he did it again, because he did. And although he was, you know, he was most wanted, and he was banned from every golf course in the UK, he managed to get around it by impersonating a Swiss or French man. What was his name?
Yeah, using pseudonyms: Gerald Hoppe, Jean Paycheckie, a count on one occasion. You know. I think it was the attitude of the Royal and Ancient. Maybe he thought, they got his back up a bit, so he thought, right, I'll get round your rules and I'll enter again. You're not stopping me from doing this. It's an open championship. We used to quote all the time, it's open for everyone. So I think that was his main game, you know. Plus, he loved the game of golf, obviously, you know. I can't really remember how it all came about, but, you know, he did pursue... trying to enter numerous times,
and he, as he's portrayed in the movie, you say he was probably not as innocent and naive as he's portrayed in the movie, because he was well read, and he encouraged you to read as well.
He was extremely well read, well educated. His portrayal in the film wasn't quite like him, but. Actors play the parts and they do it how they see it, you know, you know, they get comfortable in it, which I don't mind totally, you know. If it was, everything was true to form or fact,
it'd be a documentary,
you know. Like a documentary. It'd be boring, wouldn't it? And if the characters in it didn't have some sort of edge, Matt Rylance gives it a bit of an edge, like, you know, thinking, come on, you must know things. Like, my dad knew everything. He knew the insides and outs of things, you know. He knew the law upside down about golf and their rules, you know. He made a point of it.
So that's how he got around it.
There's always a library where if you need to find something out, you know, and used to use them.
So back to you and Jean, your twin brother, and you're identical.
Identical twins, yeah.
Yes. And ye were disco dancers, and encouraged by your dad, this is how the movie portrays it. He said, "What's the pinnacle? What's the pinnacle of disco dancing?" And you, of course, said the World Championships. So where were the World Championships?
Well, we were a little bit older than that then. We were getting into our 19s, 20s. Right. We were seasoned Northern Soul dancers, you know. We knew our way around the dance floor. And when they were offering money as prizes, we at first, we just thought we'd just enter them and see how we got on, and we started winning them quite frequently. So then we set our sights on various drinks manufacturers' championships and used to get in the finals in London and stuff like that. And then we took it away abroad with us to France, Switzerland, Germany, and they tended to dance a little bit different from what we did. So it became a bit easier
to win.
Winning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think they were 10 years behind our music. So when you're taking white labeled 12-inch record, yeah, dance music, and playing it, you know, what's this?
You're from the future. You know? They're from the future, yeah. And, yeah, of course, the fact that you were twins, obviously.
Yeah, it did help. It added something. We didn't dress alike, you know. We were a bit extroverted in our dress, like black leather suits and, you know, nice clothes, Armani and that, you know. We looked the part, so... it did help, but we, unlike my dad, we knew what to expect and knew what was precisely needed to succeed, you know. So at its benefits, we'd already been warned off my dad's exploits to understand, you know. And then funny thing is, as you probably know, being a radio DJ, that things started to change in the 80s, music-wise. Yes. Nightclubs started to lose ground to, like, raves, and now the thing now is festivals, isn't it? That's the big thing. And
so disco dancing became naff, very naff,
it
very
became
quickly.
Naff, basically. Yeah, yeah, quickly, like, overnight, you know. So there's no future in it. But we did go on from then to be, like, nightclub DJs, dream jobs, really.
Right, brilliant, brilliant. Last so there's a movie in you as well, I think, if anybody's out there. I think there's a movie in you. Back to your dad's story. I love this. Tell us about the golf club in America who had an annual tournament in your dad's name.
Blyfield Country Club. Yeah, it started off as a scratch tournament for the golfers, for people who weren't that good at golf, let's say.
Yeah.
For their members, and you know, and they used to have a prize for like the worst golfer and that lot. And then they cottoned on to my father's exploits, Morris, and they decided to call it the Flitcroft Scramble.
Right.
Ken, one of their golfers, showed my dad around the course, and he played a round, you know, as the honoured guest. And there was a big dinner afterwards, and you know, flew him out first class on British Airways, and he had a fabulous time. So, you know, he was rewarded for his efforts, I should imagine.
And
you know,
your dad is dead a good few years now. How did he live out the rest of his life? The bit that we don't see in the movie.
Afterwards, well, when the death of my mother, it took a toll on him. You know, in 2002, and he had really bad hips.
Right.
And then he started suffering from emphysema, so he just slowed right down and didn't bother doing anything. He concentrated on his grandkids, mine and Jean's, two daughters and Jean's son and daughter. He concentrated on them and us, basically. He didn't, golf didn't get mentioned much in the 2000s.
And what would you think, James, what would he think? If he was sitting down in a cinema watching The Phantom of the Open.
I think he'd think it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He'd probably shake everybody's hand for coming and having a pull through it.
As if he made it himself. Well, of course he did. He made the story that made the movie. And that's the important bit. Without his story, there'd be no movie. And it is brilliant, as we said, the feel-good film of the year. And it's in cinemas on March 18th. Great talking to you, James. We'll talk to you again when they make a movie about your life and the disco dancing world champion. Okay, mind yourself. Stay safe. See you, James.
Bye.
That's it from us. Cormac is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.